All right, welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Presents, the Top Cow Chronology Project. We are your hosts, Jace, Manny, and Jaden.
Hello.
Hey there.
And in this episode, we're going to be talking about Tales of the Witchblade number 1. And as I've said in the past, there is not a trade paperback that collects all the Tales of the Witchblade. There are collected editions that contain 2 issues each. Those can be found on eBay relatively cheaply, as well as just about every single one of the individual issues, often for about 99 cents plus shipping. And if you're not familiar with our podcast, what the Top Cow Chronology Project is, we have decided to read each and every comic that comprises the Top Cow Artifact universe in order, not in publication order, but in order of the story. So the first issues that we read took place in ancient Egypt, and we're moving forward toward present time. So Manny's going to give us a rundown of the creative lineup for Tales of the Witchblade number 1, and then we'll talk a little bit about the book.
All right, the cover date, November 1996. It was written by Christina Z, penciled by Tony Daniel, inked by Kevin Conrad, and Billy Tan, colored by Jonathan D. Smith.
I should also mention that if you want to follow along with us, you can go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com, click on the Top Cow Chronology Project link that'll take you to the page that has all our episodes on it. And if you look off to the right, there's a Comic Vine logo. If you click on that, that'll take you to the Comic Vine website where there is a chronology. That's the same chronology we're using, and that chronology was put together by the Comic Vine user Condor. So once again, of course, we want to thank him for his hard work. All right, Manny, what did you think of Tales of the Witchblade number 1?
Well, I'm pretty sure you know where I'm going with this one, but it's a typical Witchblade number 1. Same story, different setting, different character name. That's kind of how I feel about this one.
Really? You know, now that you say that, I see it, but I have to say that it was enjoyable enough, and there was something else that bothered me about the story more so than the formulaic pattern of the Tales of the Witchblade stories, that I didn't notice that.
Oh, that's, you know, just from the moment they're going to go look for quote-unquote treasure, and then Blackbeard's after them, I knew exactly where it was going. And then, you know, obviously that one guy tried to put it on, cut off his hand. That didn't work out. They ended up, you know, Blackbeard took over their ship, and then, you know, she puts the Witchblade on, and she saves the day, quote unquote. I was like, oh, all right, well.
Yeah, we definitely have seen this story before.
Yeah, the forest was kind of cool though.
The jungle.
Yeah, the jungle, and then the carnivorous plant when it spit out the heart. That was kind of cool. I'll give you that.
What about you, Jaden? What'd you think?
I liked the fact that it wasn't so much like how she said that in the book she says that the Witchblade isn't evil, and how towards the end she gets it, and also everything on the island that's been around the Witchblade, she's also is like on her side basically, because this island seems like it's somewhat magical because the Witchblade has been on it. And I felt like that was kind of interesting, because I haven't seen that before in any sort of Witchblade setting.
Yeah, they did mention that the Witchblade had been there so long that parts of it had kind of permeated the island. The island was rumored to be alive, and everything on the island was sort of affected by the Witchblade. That was cool. For me, like I said, while I agree that it was a little bit of almost a procedural, you know, much of these Tales of the Witchblade stories have been, you know, it's kind of like watching an episode of CSI. It kind of follows the same formula every time.
Yeah.
But I didn't notice that as much, because I thought the characterization for the individual characters was done pretty well. And it was also, the art distracted me more so than bothered me a little bit more so than the formulaic storytelling. The colors are great. I think it's maybe the highlight of the art is the colors. And, you know, this is drawn by Tony Daniel, who I'm actually a fan of, but being this was 19 years ago, his style has evolved more so than just about anybody that I've can remember seeing in comics other than maybe John Romita Jr., who for me, his art got worse. Whereas Tony Daniel, I like his current art more than I like this. That being said, you know, John Romita Jr.'s art way back when I liked quite a bit, and the stuff nowadays, honestly, I can't stand. I wouldn't go so far as to say I can't stand Tony Daniel's work here, but it has evolved to where it's much better nowadays, I feel. This almost looks like it has more of an anime feel. I know, Jaden, you were mentioning the eyes especially are quite large.
Yeah, they're a lot more rounded, and there's a lot... It seems as though it's not very much like a superhero comic book eyes. They're more towards the anime type eyes, I think. They're a lot bigger than I think your eyes would be on your face.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about his art, the lines are still very clean, maybe even cleaner than his lines are now. And you also wonder how much that has to do with the inkers that are on the book as well. But the biggest distraction for me was just some of these poses were just so distracting to me. Right from the start, page one, the way that Mary is standing, I mean, she's almost lifting up her shirt and she's got her hand on her belly. And I mean, the way her butt's sticking out, and it just, I mean, it's a typical comic book pose for a woman, you know, in the 90s. But, you know, and then come to find out she's touching her belly because she's actually pregnant. So then it made a little more sense to me. But when I, you know, just seeing it, it's so distracting that it really kind of pulled me out of the story. And then there was another, I mean, there's several times where we get almost full page splashes of these female characters. And it reminds me, did you guys see that picture of Kim Kardashian that she did? Where yeah. She had that cup that was, or glass or whatever that was on her butt. That's how these girls are standing. It's ridiculous. It's like a shelf. And there's, you know, there's many examples as I'm flipping through the pages here where that's, you know, that's the case. And it just, especially look at page 12 in the upper right corner, that panel. That's like a table. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know that a human spine can bend that direction. So that was a little distracting for me. The layouts I thought were good. I like the dynamics of the layouts and how, you know, they're different from every page. Page 13 especially, with Anne in the background and the scenes of the jungle laid out kind of around her. I thought that was quite well done. But they're just some choices that I guess just seemed a little cliched to me. On page 14, where we first see Blackbeard, very Spawn-like, you know, that looks directly out of Spawn.
Yeah.
And down, I mean, just on that same page as you go down, that, you know, the picture of his teeth. So almost a little Greg Capullo-like.
Yeah.
And then there was another panel I saw that I had to stare at it for almost a minute. I was trying to figure out, okay, whose art does this remind me of? It's on page 11. The picture of the guy yelling, come about and prepare to fire the cannons. Also, very Capullo. Also reminded me of Todd Knock.
Yeah.
The hair, especially the hair.
Oh, I can see that.
I mean, if somebody showed me this panel and said, you know, who drew this? I might guess Capullo. I might guess Todd Knock. I would never guess Tony Daniel. So I find it very interesting how much his style has changed.
Yeah,
I mean, definitely. It doesn't look... Yeah, I mean, Manny's got on his computer screen right now a picture of a cover of Superman, Wonder Woman. And, I mean, this art is night and day. Night and day.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't necessarily think that they're the same artist.
So again, you know, I have mixed feelings about the art. It's, you know, quite a bit more stylized than Tony Daniel's current style. But it's not necessarily bad, other than some of those female poses. And I think the problem there is just they're very much of their time. You know, I think Tony Daniel's probably learned a lot, you know, since then. And we don't see the... you know, gross exaggeration and disproportion in especially the female characters. So there's a few other things about the story that I noticed, but let's go through the synopsis first and then we can talk about the actual story itself a little more. So it's A Tale of the Witchblade, and actually it's subtitled A Tale of Anne Bonny, Witchblade of the High Seas. So we know that this is going to be another pirate tale, kind of like the last episode. And so the first page, quite a bit of exposition, kind of setting the tone. We're told about a pair of pirates, Calico Jack and the young girl he met named Anne Bonny. They've teamed up with a couple of other pirates, another pirate couple, William and Mary Red, and they've gotten their hands on this ancient treasure map where supposedly this priceless treasure exists, and the couple, William and Mary, are hoping that this treasure is going to be enough so they can kind of quit the pirate life, because apparently they have a baby on the way. Then Anne Bonny comes into the room where Mary and William had been discussing their retirement, says the island's coming up soon, be ready. And they kind of talk about the other pirates, other treasure hunters that have gone looking for the treasure have gone mad, or they lost their hands or their lives, and so they're definitely a bit worried, but feel that the reward is worth the risk. And they put it to their crew whether or not their crewmen are going to set foot on the island, because it's so dangerous they're not going to just order them to do so. But at the end of the day, they're pirates, so of course they choose to go along. And right from the start, when they set foot on the island, they feel that there's something not quite right about it. The trees seem to sway, even though there's no wind. Strange sounds. So they head inward, inland, I guess you'd say, and supposedly they're on the right trail, and Anne finds these seeds in a bag hanging from some rocks. I really don't know the significance of those. She does dump them out in her hand, and she says she feels like the seeds are alive, they're moving. Meanwhile, the ground is sticky, the air is hot and thick, there's moths that seem to want to sting them, bother them, the ground seems to move for no reason at all, and it's affecting everybody but Anne. They're convinced that it's cursed, the place is cursed, but even Anne sees it, and she wonders why the island seems to be leaving her alone. One guy's attacked by vines and pulled into the flower of a man-eating plant, I guess you'd say. Chews him up and spits out all that's left, which is nothing but the heart. And Anne says, we got to keep moving, the rest will happen to us. Meanwhile, those that stayed on the ship are attacked by the Queen Anne's Revenge, which is Blackbeard's ship. And then the scene shifts back to the landing party. There's an avalanche that buries another man, and they lose another of their landing party. Then we see a scene of Blackbeard heading inland in a kind of a rowboat, so his crew perhaps avoiding a lot of the traps and pitfalls of this living island by using the waterways of said island. And then the scene shifts to a great pile of treasure on which sits atop a block, and on that block is the Witchblade itself. We see the bones of many pirates kind of strewn about on this pillar. And before they can reach the treasure, two of them reach the treasure, and one of them climbs on top and places the Witchblade on his hand. And of course, he loses his arm, as we've seen in Witchblade issues of the past. And before anyone else can go up to the treasure, Anne yells, no, it's a trap. And then Blackbeard shows up. He has Mary Red as a hostage, tells Anne Bonny to drop her pistol, and basically sends his guys to attack. Meanwhile, some panthers from the island, who seem to be under the control of the Witchblade, attack Blackbeard's men. The Witchblade itself is calling out to Anne, telling her, take me, take me. She dons the Witchblade and is immediately shed of her clothes, which we've never seen the Witchblade do that before. Yeah. and she's covered in this very scant armor of the Witchblade, so I found that to be a little distracting. Not sure what that was about. It was just a way to show some skin for the creators. But with the Witchblade in her possession, Anne handily defeats the Blackbeard and his cronies, traps them on the island, and now that she's in control of the Witchblade, as Manny said earlier, it seems that she basically, or maybe it was Jaden, that said that, yeah, she seems to control the wildlife on the island that previously had been trying to stop her allies. So there's a cool scene on page 24 where she's kind of standing there with the Witchblade, and you see panthers and tigers and such behind her. And meanwhile, Blackbeard and his cronies are trapped. So they leave the island. Again, Anne being basically naked is kind of distracting for me, and not in a good way. And Mary states that now that they have this new weapon, perhaps their lives will be a lot easier. She says, with it, perhaps we can find even greater wealth and finally fare better than our competitors. To which Anne replies, that's decidedly so. We are already faring much better than them. And the final scene is a picture of one of the tigers from the island gnawing on the hand of one of Blackbeard's men. And that's the end. So yeah, I definitely was pulled out of the story because, for Anne being drawn provocatively and, out of proportion a little bit, very much of its time of the 90s, at least she wasn't next to naked, At least her legs were fully covered. She had a top on that, covered her arms completely, but as soon as she puts on that Witchblade, boom, she's like naked.
Yeah.
And it kind of bothered me. I was like, really? Is that really necessary?
Yeah.
It's 1995, though.
Yeah, so I don't know if they wanted to make clear that she was wearing the Witchblade, because, her outfit and the way the armor does cover her, it is very reminiscent of, Sarah Pazzini. So, an enjoyable story. This, as we've said, this style of art from Tony Daniel, we're not used to seeing from him, but it did give the story kind of a lighthearted, fun feel, being that it was a little more on the cartoony side.
Yeah.
And I thought the pacing was done fairly well. The dialogue, again, done well.
I felt like the pirate talk was a little bit forced in this issue. I felt like they talked like normal 21st century people for a while, and then, 20th century people, and then for, they would put a ye in there somewhere.
Or arr.
Yeah, pretty much. And it just didn't feel like it really flowed very well.
Yeah, I could see that. Ye reckon this heap of loot spell cast, those stories of cursed treasure, are our only stories. Nay, 'tis plenty of treasure. So yeah, I could definitely see that. Seems like in the character interactions, it's normal talk, and then when they're trying to kind of set the mood.
Yeah. It's like they went in after and were like, oh, we can put an E here and put an apostrophe instead of a V here.
What'd you guys think about the storytelling from panel to panel?
I thought the art made it really clear what was going on. It made it pretty easy to follow.
Yeah, I feel like for the most part it's done well. Especially, what page is this? I'm page 10, 8? Yeah, page 8. But then there are times I felt it was a little choppy, but you could definitely understand what was going on.
No, it was pretty good. I mean, there's actually, now that I go through it again, there's quite a few scenes where it's almost like, dude, pan up a little bit, we get it.
What do you mean?
There's just so many panels of just her backside. That page 8, for example, is one of those. It's just her backside, and then you keep going, And on page 12, it's just her backside. There's one there. There are two. And where else?
21 also. I mean, it's a full shot of her, but...
Yeah, there's 21, just, and then...
she's got to be, you know, it's got to be so where we can see her backside, and it turns back toward the focal point of the image.
Same thing on 25. The middle one is just her backside. And so, yeah, that's a...
Yeah, maybe
it's a... very 90s.
Yeah.
This comic.
Very 90s, yep. I'll agree with that. But an enjoyable read. I will say that I don't think it's as complete a book as Darkness, Black Sails. I don't know that I would read a comic if this was a series.
Now, would that have to do just for the story or because of the artwork?
You know, it just doesn't feel... It's just not compelling, I guess I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, the not that the characters are bad, and not that the comic's not well done. You know, like I said, the colors are amazing. Not the style of art I expect from Tony Daniel, but good in its own way, even with the 90s feel of it. But I guess that Darkness Blood Sails that we read last episode was just... The character of Miguel Estacado was very compelling. I wanted to know more about him. I don't necessarily want to know more about these characters. I feel like I already know what there is to know. They're not as complicated or as interesting. You know, they're not as multi-layered. I feel like I know what there is to know. You know, they're pirates. They want to get treasure so they can live a life of leisure. You know, whereas with Miguel Estacado, I think there's a lot more there, you know. Does he want to be evil? Does he want to be the bearer of the darkness? Is he looking for a way to rid himself of it? And so on and so on.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
All right. Is that going to do it? We got anything else to say?
Good.
What would you think of this issue if it was done by Tony Daniel current form?
I would like to see that. I think that would be very interesting to see him. Doesn't necessarily have to be shot for shot or panel for panel, but to see him reinterpret the script and do it again would probably be extremely interesting.
I think it would fit better with his more current style with this type of a book.
I think it might lose some of that fun, high adventure kind of feel that it has.
Yeah.
But it might feel more compelling.
Yeah, maybe.
And then you wonder, you know, if you were to have it re-scripted also, how much of a difference that might make. But definitely a fun read. All right, we want to thank you all for joining us. Don't forget, you can like us on Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. You can send us an email. The address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. And, of course, you can check out our website. That's thecomicsourceblog.com. And while you're there, you can find these episodes. You can find episodes of my YouTube show. You can find Manny's blog there, the Sketch Gallery. We'll have a convention page coming up soon. So be sure and send us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing. And join us next time when we will be discussing The Darkness number 89. See you then.